Welcome to the Autism Roundtable. I'm Leah Gross, founder of Circle Care Services. I'll bring you autism experts from all kinds of fields for helpful parenting ideas, insights, and strategies. Tune in for learning and support and connection. Welcome, Caitlin, to the Autism Roundtable. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hello.
You come with many hats in the autism population and the autism field. Tell us a little bit about your personal background and your professional background.
Well, I feel like that always kind of mixes together. My name is Caitlin Wilder. I do tend to be generally wild in a variety of ways. But I personally tend to be, you know, really, really straightforward as a person. I've been a behavior analyst and a teacher for about 15 years. And I actually, all of my work that I do now with people with autism was heavily influenced by quitting my job in schools and becoming a life coach about 4 years ago. And then somehow this, you know, magic carpet ride of life brought me right back into a school with a lot of new knowledge that I feel that we as, you know, professionals should be using with autistic people and all of the people, if you ask me. But I have worked in home and community, not in clinic, with autistic people, and then as well as in schools with kind of all the populations, mostly autistic, emotionally disturbed, or just general education. So.
Wow. Okay. So what led you on the journey to doing coaching in the community?
Well, as far as life coaching, you mean with that?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Really, honestly, it was because the schools were just kind of a dismal place to work, you know, as a behavior analyst in that setting. And I know if, you know, there are parents listening that have been through the process of like IEP meetings and all of that. So it's the process of, you know, conducting those functional behavior assessments and then writing those behavior intervention plans for the teachers to utilize in the school setting that are supposed to decrease these undesirable behaviors that we're seeing. But if, you know, you've been in a public school setting, you can probably see that that isn't working too well. And there wasn't really a lot of support. I was a very traditionally trained behavior analyst, so, you know, the principles of reinforcement and punishment. And you would go in and you would do exactly what you were taught, but then it never really seemed to work and your clients never seemed to benefit like you wanted them to. And I tend to be like pretty organized and put together and, you know, exercise and eat well. So people are always like, wow, Caitlin, can you be my life coach? Like, I really need to get it together like you. So that's when I decided to make that pivot. But when I made that pivot, I did so with behavior analysis and kind of learned everything that we'd all been missing this whole time.
Yeah. And you know what? I do think that the field of ABA is definitely developing. And there are so many practitioners like you out there that are saying, like, the old wasn't working and we need to reform what treatment today should really look like. And I actually just listened to an excellent lecture last night on, you know, how today we're really changing that practice into more of love and accepting and a positive reinforcement versus punishment or extinction, because that's what's working for 2025 children, you know.
Well, and that's why I say I feel it's a shift for all humans to make, because just as the public schools, a lot of organizations are based on us as a person going into them and then being who they want us to be. And that doesn't bring us a lot of satisfaction. And you can probably understand that whether you're listening and you're just a regular grown up with a job, or you're a kid that's going into school and then coming home with a sad face on your paper every day because you're not doing what you're told to do all the time.
Exactly. Yeah. You used the term when I spoke with you last, PDA, pathological demand avoidance. Tell us a little bit about that and how that shapes your thoughts.
Well, it was interesting because I was doing the life coaching and then ended up back in a school with an autistic client as a self-employed person, so not under, needing to follow all the typical regulations. And this client, which I did not know at the time, or nor was I really familiar with at the time, was pathologically demand avoidant. And what that is they call it like a profile of autism. So the person would be autistic, and then on top of that, they would be pathologically demand avoidant. And it's really just characterized by avoiding demands, but the demands really could be anything from like take out your pencil to like, oh, I have to go to the bathroom, or so really anything that removes your sense of like control and autonomy really sends you into like this heightened response that can seem like very dramatic and unreasonable. But it's so much about the person's internal events and how they're perceiving things going on, rather than how we as the professional are observing them. And that just throws behavior analysts all for a loop because we're all about just sitting there and stare at people and then just like making our judgments off of our observations. But these are things that you're not going to understand unless you, number one, open yourself to removing your own judgments and assumptions about this person and about how the world and people should work. And then actually just talking to them and then hearing what they say and then believing that experience as being something that is valid just because they say it is. And they're really the only person that knows.
Yes, and I guess we could almost empathize with that because I think that like we all like neurodiverse, neurotypical, we all perceive a situation however we perceive it, and the person next to you might have perceived that situation so differently than I perceived it. And like I'll go into a meeting sometimes with my business partner, and I'll walk out with one perspective, and he walks out with another perspective. Right. And I'm like, wait, isn't that interesting that we were both sitting in this meeting and we both came out with two different like opinions, you know? So in a way, when we're working with the children, I love the idea of what you're bringing up is like really the necessity to get into that child's mind and understand what they're feeling and what their perspective is. And then again, what will motivate them? Because if we could understand where a child's thinking and their line of thinking, and we actually take the time to ask them how they're feeling and how they're thinking, then we could really make some significant change. So what kind of methods did you find to work with children that are displaying this PDA?
Well, it really is just your typical autistic, like rigidity of thinking, and that things. I really want to be in control, therefore everything has to be exactly as I want it. But there isn't a lot of like rationale around that necessarily. Those with PDA can have like a really heightened like nervous system response to something. Like I think when I spoke with you the first time, I talked about that same client who. This had to have been the first day, and they were like going through the cafeteria line. And it's very standard. Like kids walk in, they're all in line, they're waiting for their food. It's going at a pretty reasonable speed compared to what I've seen. And this child is just screaming at the other kids in line that are just standing there waiting, doing that to hurry and get out of his way and, yelling at the cafeteria workers. And then finally, we make it out of line with the food, and he's just so overwhelmed. And I'm really just have never in my life seen anything like this. And I know that the previous me, some years before would have been like, you're being really dramatic, and like this is exactly how this is supposed to be, and like you need to calm down. But it really at this moment, I just had this curiosity of like, hey, dude, like what's going on? Like, what is this like for you? And he tells me it's like 1,000 knives stabbing him, like all through his body, to have to stand in this line and wait. And I was like, wow, that must be really terrible for you. And just that kid's face when he looked at me and was like, wow, somebody will actually listen to me. And that's really what weighed most of the movement and a lot of the things, is that there was finally a person there who was going to validate how they were feeling and like how they were experiencing these situations. And as far as, you know, traditional ways, it moves from like a compliance based of like, I'm going to tell you what to do, to I am going to collaborate with you. And the way I would do that in the school setting is kind of come from the adult angle and say like, okay, well, you know, my goal for this particular activity or whatever is, you know, to get this small amount of something done. You know, what's your goal? Often they would say, well, I just want peace. We worked on that a while before we got to peace, because before that it was probably a lot of, I want everybody to leave me alone or not talk to me ever again or stop trying to ruin my life or something of that nature. And that we, you know, with my assistants, got around to being peaceful. And so it was working towards like showing that client that like, hey, I've got some peace for you. We just might not be able to get it in exactly the way your head thinks that we're going to. What would you think about? Could we maybe try that? And then eventually over time, what you're developing with them is like more flexibility. Like I love hearing about you in the meeting and the person walking out, having shifted your perspectives. And you can do these same things with these clients. It just takes, you know, a longer period of time often. It takes what behavior analysts don't like. They want their goal lines and their specific targets and to hit them at these rates. And that just isn't the way that it works with these children. It's you can just put down what something is and explain it to them, or just talk about it in passing and maybe they're listening to you, as opposed to having them sit and look directly in your eyes and judge like what learning is supposed to be and look like. And by approaching these things so much more non-judgmentally, by having a kid screaming and yelling and coming up and saying like, hey, like, how are you feeling? Like, what's going on with you? Like, those are those moments where we get to create what everybody is calling executive functioning skills. I don't usually call them that. But that's when we can dig in and talk about those things and those moments where we get to learn everything we need to know is so often entirely covered up by judgment and punishment and, you know, removal of reinforcement, you know, for the sorts of things.
And I agree with you. I think that the compassion and the care and the child feeling validated and understood, you know, I mean, psychology 101 is we have to validate whatever it is that person is feeling. Mm-hmm. And when we give that validation, then what we could do is calm that nervous system and make them ready learners. But if they're in fight or flight and they're in a place, like you were saying, in the line and feeling like there's like 100 knives at them and no one understands them, then they're not going to be a ready learner. So your points are like amazing. And I do think that all practitioners should be implementing compassion, validation, and understanding to our clients, because I think that most people that go into the industry of treating children, of working with children, of bettering children's lives, really do want to make a positive impact. And if we shift our perspective to understanding, validating, and we have more practitioners out there like you who are understanding that, I think we'll make that much greater gains and changes to the population that we're trying to address.
Yeah, I agree. There are more behavior analytic ways to say it. I think maybe that's what catches them up, is like they do not teach you about validating people's feelings in behavior analyst school, like not at all. So I am glad that we have some science available to support us in that way. But yes, we do need to.
So I'll tell you, Caitlin, I am currently going to school to become a behavior analyst.
Yeah, that's why I even saw you and commented on the podcast in the first place, because I just think that's so amazing. Like, I wish I was an OT and just knew all of the things that you knew.
You're so amazing. Thank you, Caitlin. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of preconceived notions before I went in to become a behavior analyst. And I've worked with a lot of BCBAs in the past, and I even have, I have a company that we provide ABA. And so I've seen a lot of BCBAs, and always when I opened up my company, I'm like, you know, we're doing ABA with a twist of OT, and we need to put the compassion, we need to put the care in. I'm DIR certified. We need to make sure that it's child-centered, that we're following the child's lead, and right, all that stuff. So I went back to school now, and I was like waiting to hear like all these things like punishment and extinction. And I'm so surprised, because the coursework is, there's soft skills involved, there's compassion, there's care, there's all the things that we're talking about today are incorporated into the coursework. So I do have to give a shout out to the BCBA community, that they are hearing us and they are hearing people like me and you who are discussing these important things, and they're implementing it. Like I said, they just made this course. What was it called? I have to pull it up. I think it was Dr. Henley. Mm-hmm. They made a course where we had to like go in and listen to it last night, and it was phenomenal. It was great. But he was talking all about compassion and care. He was talking against all the things that we're talking about, you know, trials and punishment and quiet rooms and padded rooms. And he was saying that in 2025, we do need to change the way that we think. And I think that enough of us are out there talking about it and agreeing. And I do think there will be a shift. And I think the older therapists that were trained in that method need to go back and learn these skills, because we want these children to get the best service out there. We want kids to have a place to go. You know, mm-hmm. we want children on the autism spectrum to thrive and to live their best lives. And this is what's available to them. So I think we need to make that change. I think us as behavior analysts have to get out there and say, we're working with kids. We see what works. Just as you're saying, you see what works. And we have to change the way we treat. I do think so.
Yeah. And I do. I went to grad school in 2008. So it's been a minute, you know, since then. But it really is kind of a case of, you don't know what you don't know, you know?
Yes.
And really, a lot of my issue, well, there was not really having, you know, the appropriate behavior science available, but also what really tapped me out of being in the school system was my own mental health. You know, like, I had raging anxiety and just thought I was like really good at planning, you know, and like, that's not at all true. I wasn't able to I had no self-awareness of my own internal events and what those meant as far as like my own emotions. Like, I do believe firmly that I became a behavior analyst unknowingly because I wanted to feel more in control of myself in my life. And then in turn, I end up in a field where I am controlling other people. So like, there is a level of obviously like new science that we need, but there also is a necessary and crucial awareness that we need to have within ourselves as practitioners, because otherwise when we're in this field with these children, well, we're with children, so we're inevitably going to be like really annoyed and overwhelmed at times, right? So we need to be able to recognize that and understand what that means about us. And then ironically enough, that's exactly what we're teaching these kids.
Yes.
So to me, it's definitely a call for practitioners to go first and to be understanding and practicing the skills that they're actually teaching other people, instead of being like, hey, does anybody have a protocol for this? Does anybody have an article about how to, I mean, I'll go, we're all in a lot of Facebook groups these days. And like, you'll see, you know, practitioners going up in there and asking for an intervention about this behavior with this function. And like, they just want to like lay it on there and check the boxes and do the things and just have the person be okay again. And I'm like, there's just more to it than that, guys.
Yes. Like,
humanity is not replicable.
100% agreed. And yeah. Okay, so one more article that I just read that I have to share with you that you're going to
like. I do love articles, though. I don't want it to get out there that I'm like a person that doesn't want to read research, because that's not true.
No. We all like research. We all like knowledge. And I think that we've got to always keep going with the knowledge and reading what's new and updated so that we could stay updated and so that we could benefit from other people's knowledge. Exactly. So Dr. Freeman wrote a great article in 2021, and I just read it for my class as well. And he talks about there's no such thing as a bad boy. That's the label. Exactly. And he talks about how we really have to think about like the context of what's going on in each environment and that the behaviors that lead up to it. And he talks about a baby in the car. Oh, sorry, a baby in the car. I gave away the punchline already. He talks about someone driving to work and the car in front stops and they start getting really frustrated and they're honking on the horn and they're like, what is going on with the car in front? And he's so frustrated, he gets out of the car and he comes over to the driver's window and he sees that the mom is turned around to a baby that's blue and not breathing. And all of a sudden, that anger and that frustration and all the things, once you know what's going on and the pieces that are going on, all of a sudden you turn and right, you become compassionate. Oh my goodness, the baby's not breathing. Let me help, right? And no longer are you angry at that driver for not moving the car, even though you're in a rush to get to work. And he relates that to us as therapists and practitioners that like, sometimes we're angry, we're frustrated, but if we would take a moment to step back and look at the context, look at the environment, look at the child, and what is motivating these children? Why are they upset? Why does he feel knives in his chest? And why is he getting so dysregulated in the line and angry and needing to shout instead of like looking at the blame and telling them, you know, stop that behavior? If we really step back and understand what's motivating that child, we could, as practitioners, really go far.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And all of that, like really what we've been talking about this whole time is like perspective taking, which yes. is a skill that, you know, I'm teaching all the time. And the reason they're in that line and they're so, well, there's their, you know, sensory response to it, but they in their head have decided exactly what they want and the way that they want it. And these people and things that are impeding that outcome, he's not able to take their perspective of, oh, they're just waiting for food too. Oh, this person back here in the cafeteria line is doing that as their job. And they're like lots of rules and things involved in it and why it might not quite be ready yet. And so we can just wait and then those things will come. This is an inevitable part of life. Those are the nuances and things that an autistic person will lack as a result of their disability. And it's us that are there to just show them those things. So like just one of the funniest things with this client is every time somebody would give him like a worksheet or something, the response would be something like, why are you ruining my day? Like, why are you trying to ruin my life by doing this to me? And eventually over time we have conversation, like they get to know the teachers and it's like, you know, that person actually took this job because they really enjoy children and helping them learn things. And so I think maybe they don't give it to you to ruin your life. Maybe they think that they could be helping you and that's a good thing. And they're like, okay. And then all of a sudden it was a little better once you could, you know, shift your head to, oh, well, maybe that other thing could be true. That's not so terrible. And that's exactly what we need to be doing all day. You know, when we wake up in the morning and, you know, the we knock our coffee over and then we're like, oh, of course this is going to be my day. And then we just keep on rolling. Like if we could take more of a mindset of compassion, of just believing, I call it, everyone's doing the best they can. Like, I just hold that as a belief that even if I don't understand and I'm angry about it, that we're all doing the best they can.
And I think it's a great way to look at the world, because we're interacting all day with people, and especially in our profession with kids. And if we're giving them the benefit of the doubt and we're thinking that everyone's just trying their best, then we could act with that much more compassion and empathy. Right.
Yeah. And I think that adults, we're doing that too. Like, when I am overwhelmed and crying, like, I'm doing the best I can. Like, what that's signaling is that I don't have the skills, the understand, the whatever, to be able to handle whatever I'm experiencing at that moment. And that could be a window into a skill that I maybe could use that could help decrease the suffering that I'm experiencing. And that's the same thing for the sweet babies. Every single one of them at every age, on every level, cognitively, these things can be applied.
100%. And yeah. You're amazing that you're actually incorporating it. You know, it's a goal of everyone's, and I love that you're actually doing that. Okay, another one we talked about was ACT, acceptance and commitment therapy.
Yeah.
How can you go ahead and explain to us what that is and how you incorporate that into treatment?
Sure. So I'll turn over my notes for how I talk about ACT and try to talk about it in a more traditional way that it's spoken of. That's what ACT is for. It's to be applied to contexts. It's to be used as practitioners choose to use it, as opposed to, like, that's how he designed it. It's a process-based therapy. So what it is the concept of psychological flexibility. So what we've been talking about as far as autism is just being exceptionally rigid. And that's not just autistic people. We can all be rigid at various times. So ACT, acceptance commitment therapy, is the idea of helping us be more mentally flexible by learning to be aware of and monitor our own internal events, like be those specific thoughts, or whether they just be feelings that we have or sensations, like somewhere around in our body. And then there is a process by which you can move, or six different processes, actually, that you can teach and move through. And then really you can make up strategies for any of those things. You know, one is present moment awareness, which is essentially mindfulness. And there are, you know, 1,000 ways to move your head out of scrolling in the future to, oh my gosh, why is this happening? What's going to happen? Why is my foot? Da, da, da. To, you know, feeling your feet on the ground and realizing that maybe we're just sitting in a chair and we could, you know, come back to contact with the world and be okay now. So it's through those six different processes that you teach to your clients, with various exercises that you can learn in books or things. I love making stuff up. Like, I love making up ACT exercises.
Tell us about one or two of your favorite ACT exercises that you implement daily.
Well, you know, one I really like, I call taking your own medicine. And taking your own medicine is when you get really mad at someone and you want them to do all of these things and act this way, that chances are that probably are just the actions that you need to be reflecting upon yourself. So asking that person, okay, well, if you were to apply those things to yourself, what would you do? And usually they come up with stuff that actually solves their entire problem without actually speaking to the other person.
I love that. And I love how you have the child do the problem solving, because I know that takes a lot of time and effort. You know, whenever I do it, you know, in treatment, you really have to prompt them, but then if you let them take the time to make those mental processes and come to it themselves, then all of a sudden they own it.
They own it, and then they have it forever. See, that's the thing, is when we're talking about, like, punishing or behavior sheets or points or whatever, like those things, you have to keep doing them forever or even at a greater intensity to maintain the initial effect that you had. This is about the client choosing meaningful change that is valuable to them, that they did themselves. Like, they just learned a skill and now they've got it forever. They chose it.
And, you know, back to our previous conversation, as you're saying this, I'm just thinking that when we were in school, there was much more of a compliance. You know, 20 years ago, when we went to school, you sat down, you sat at a desk, and you listened to what the teacher said, and there was no talking back, and there was no engagement. But in 2025, that's just not the student of today. And for us to shift our perspective and start including children in the process, such as ACT, and let them own it, I think it's the only way to teach.
I do as well. And I hear you talking about that school used to be a lot more compliance-based when you're, like, it's still that way. It's still that way now, like traditional public school. And it's not so much, I mean, there's the compliance-based systems, but then there's just so many other things going on, like just the size of it, the fact that it can be just a very overwhelming setting and that the job has become so meaningless to so many that it's like, how can you ask someone to find compassion for this student that's having such a hard time when they hate their life every day?
Great point.
Yeah. And then they're coming in when you hate your life every day, ask me how I know, everything is everyone else's fault.
Right.
Right. So then what do you think you're doing as a teacher? You're going to be quiet. Stop annoying me. Why are you doing that? What's wrong with you? Like, because it can just be too painful for a grown adult to have to say, oh, hang on, maybe I'm the problem.
100%. And I do think that as caregivers, as people engaging with children, it's like a prerequisite to walking into that classroom is to be classroom ready. And that means to be able to give. And if you're not able to give, if your cup isn't full, if your emotional, you know, regulation, where you are in a mental space is not good, then obviously you can't give back. So I definitely agree with that point. And I think great points that you're bringing up.
Man, I even had a kid client that would say, fed me, okay, so you're telling me it's me, I'm the problem. And I was like, what? I mean, yes and no. Like, I didn't mean it like that. But what I'm saying is we could maybe choose something else that would take us somewhere else. And, like, wouldn't that be awesome? Possibly. That's probably my other favorite intervention to use is just, like, flexible language. Like, I'm sure you can hear me saying it. Like, maybe is probably my most used word with kids when you're trying to help them kind of loosen up around something they seem to be really, really stuck to. You know, like, I'm trying to think of any good examples. And, of course, they all fly out of my head. But it's a lot easier to get a maybe out of a kid than it is to get a yes or a no. And, like, kids really do, if a kid can do it, if they think they can do it, they'll do it. Like, if they're not doing it, it's because they have some sort of fear around it. Okay? And we can talk about that. Be like, oh, are you worried about doing anything? Oh, yes, I'm worried about this thing. Oh, well, that makes a lot of sense. But could maybe this other thing also happen too? You're like, well, yeah, I guess so. And could that maybe not be terrible? Yeah, maybe not terrible. Okay, well, could we give it a try? I'll go with you. Okay. And then they go and it's like the most life-changing experience and they're so happy that they did it. And nobody forced anybody to do it.
Right, right. And I love that. I love how you're motivating through using what's important to them and their choices.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's one of the processes of ACT are values. And as professionals, it's not just about the kid like telling us what they value. Because again, if you talk to an adult that maybe wasn't in the best state of life and you ask them what they value, like there could be a lot of gestures and words in reply that you could see. But as professionals and as parents and as anybody, you're able to learn to not say that you know what someone else is doing, but you can read their behavior a little better. And then based on that, you can ask them questions around what they're feeling and thinking to see if those things make sense. And with ACT, you just learn a lot more about human emotions. Like Dr. Stephen Hayes is the one who created that. And one thing he says very often is, you hurt where you care. So when someone does get very angry and upset, like that's pointing directly at what they care about. So you can learn about it through those instances. So there's just, and that's observation. Behavior analysts love that. So there's definitely lots of, just so many different strategies out there to better understand yourself and also to help other people be able to do the same with our autistic friends. We just really have to remove our judgment as professionals as to what's like normal. Because like, what is normal, y'all? Where are these neurotypical kids? When I see a description of a neurotypical kid, I'm like, are there any of those anyway?
I want to know if we have any normal adults too in the world, honestly. I always say, what's normal? You know, what is normal? We're all so individual. We all have our different wants, our different needs, our different, things that make us tick. And I think everyone's just so individual, and that label of normal is just so non-existent.
Yeah, I think maybe people want it to be, want things to be easy. I think that's the point. And that's something that's making life extremely challenging for all of us, is wanting things to be easy. So that turns into a lot of what we talk about in therapy, as well as, you know, the inevitable pains of life that we experience, and how sometimes that those painful things can actually be really pivotal and transformational. And then like looking at examples of when something hard actually created like something really awesome. So maybe we could be doing that now, huh?
Yeah. Ah. I love that. No, it's true.
Putting my therapy face on.
Yeah, there you go. And I'm feeling therapized right there. Right. We could all use a little bit of therapy, a little one-on-one compassion care and digging into our mental status. Okay. So my next question I really had for you was, what techniques do you use to motivate children in a way that respects their autonomy and individuality? Do you feel like we already covered that?
Well, I mean, the way to do that is to do, we were just talking about values, and that would be exactly what I would respond. Like, kids are not necessarily like motivated by, they can be motivated by tangible items, but those tangible items I don't think are going to get to like the heart of the matter. You know, like my friend in the cafeteria line, like there was no amount of M&Ms, as my graduate advisor used to say, that was going to get that kid to chill out and go through that line, because it was all in his head. So what we learned more was that he wanted his life to be peaceful, you know, and of course,
no amount of M&Ms. And the other one, my other pet peeve, is telling him, chill out, chill out, just calm down,
calm down. That doesn't work for grownups. I don't know why people tell. We didn't talk about authority yet. Maybe that's what we can talk about.
Okay, we'll touch on that next.
He needed to learn a workable way to get to his peace, like something that worked for him and also something that worked for the environment. And what they end up learning in that process is what is going to work best for you in that environment to get you what you want, like most quickly in the most peaceful way you want it. You're probably just going to have to do it in a different way than your head's telling you that it's going to have to happen. Yeah. And that is very challenging, but in service of that thing that they want so desperately, like this peace, this lunch, you know, whatever else it may be, like they will make those hard choices. And then at the end of it, like, so they make the hard choice, they get through, you give them a little while, have the lunch, and then you're like, so dude, tell me, was that better or worse than the way we used to do the line? And they're like, yeah, that was way better. I think so too. We like that other way looked really stressful. And now we just get to hang on and walk through and get our food and not argue with anybody. And like, it's amazing. So they see it, you know, it's like when you stop forcing them through it is when they finally are able to see it. And it is our job as practitioners, I think, to learn how to show them those things in their environment instead of trying to coerce them into everything.
Yeah. And I think as parents as well, like we become therapists as parents. So, you know, I'm a mom of six. So I would say that I do therapy. Yes, yes. I do. Yeah. I think I do therapy all day. I think I start in the morning with myself. Then I go to my kids. Then I go to my clients. And then I go right back to my kids. And then my husband's somewhere there in the mix too, right?
Wow.
So
I love how you were first in that line.
Oh, we have to start with ourselves.
I know, because if you didn't, like that whole thing about putting on your own oxygen mask first was not a joke. Like it's not just for airplanes. It's definitely for moms all the
time. No. And I do feel like moms are therapists every day in their own homes and that they, I mean, shout out to all moms out there. But, you know, when, you know, I have a specific child that I'm thinking of my own biological children. And for her, authority really doesn't work. It just, you know, anything that any direct command that I'm going to give her, it won't work. And, you know, taking the different, you know, philosophies and technologies and things that we've learned and that we're talking about right now and implementing it in the home every day is could go that far. And I'm sure in your life coaching, you could talk to this a little bit more, but handing this over and empowering parents to be that life coach for the children is also takes it that much farther.
And you can do that. And that's another thing I'll say about ACT is that ACT can be used by, you know, adults in regular therapy with absolutely nothing to do with children. Like I use it with my parents when I do parent training in ABA. Like it is, and of course, you going first will help you be able to do those things with your kids. But it's just like absolutely the most magical stuff for everyone. And it really is that authority that's killing us all because, well, even just thinking about kids, like, of course, as adults, we have taken on the responsibility of keeping these little humans in our care and being responsible for everything that they need and helping them become, you know, this person that we want to be. But that doesn't mean that, like, they're these little robots that do everything that we say all the time. They think they don't have all the skills that adults have or the experiences, but they still have that same want of autonomy. And think about what happens if an authority figure comes up to you and starts barking at you. One of two things is going to happen. You're going to be afraid. And so you're going to comply based on fear, which is not good for anybody in the long run. Or you're going to pull back on that rope. You're going to be like, come at me, bro. Like, let's do this. You know, so like, are those really the two responses that we're trying to bring out of kids in general? No. Wouldn't it be better if we could just talk to them like they're people? In my opinion, yes.
People, and also we're in a very fast society. We're in a society where we flick our phones and everything's available at the ready and we send texts and even, you know, if someone sends you a text, it's like etiquette that you're going to respond with in, you know, 30 minutes to an hour, right? So we're in a very fast society and we think parenting could be fast too. And if we demand something that it's going to be fast, but I love how you've been playing out the scenarios and talking through as if you're a therapist on the podcast, because it what you're showing us is things are not fast. You do have to break down the situation and give that child the time to process.
Absolutely. And that's really what we as people have kind of like we've gotten too focused as a society on the goal of success, which is just like our goal lines. They're linear. They're supposed to go on this basic time. No, guys, actually, there was that whole journey of life thing that we're supposed to be enjoying. And we're missing it by being like so entirely focused on the goal. And so focused on things being easy, like technology and the internet and like the speed at which it moves really has us all thinking that if something's hard, that we should be able to come up with something to make that go away. And that just isn't the case. Like No. Sometimes things are hard. Man, every time I watch an old Western movie or something, I'm like, man, everything was so hard for those people. Like, no wonder it wasn't like, you know, what we're experiencing now. So I do think that want for everything to be easy creates a lot more pain. And hey, guess what? There's another part of ACT that talks about turning into your pain and further understanding your suffering in order to find freedom. So,
okay, share a little bit more about that. That's a new concept for me.
Really?
Turning into your pain?
Well, yes, absolutely.
Okay, like tell me more.
So for example, even if you're just out in the world blaming, you know, other people for everything that's going on with you, what you're really avoiding is the vulnerability of having to like take responsibility for that. You know, like my actions that I chose had some hand in creating this pain. And does that hurt? Yeah, of course it hurts. But guess what? It's also your ultimate freedom, because you can learn to understand all of those things about yourself, all of those choices that you've made. You can learn what's really important to you through all of that pain. And then you can start taking action that's going to move you towards the things that you actually want. And if you had not taken the time to turn towards that pain and gather that information, you'd still be stuck right where you are.
I love it. I love it. And I definitely know the concept. I just didn't know how you phrased it. But
yes.
We have a friend, and he literally every week there's another problem. Like, you know, this is a problem and that's a problem. And this one did something wrong to them and that one did something wrong to him. And the system's all messed up. Right. And after a while, you're like, hey, if there's never any positive interactions and you're always upset at somebody and always bubbling over with anger at somebody, let's take a step back. What is the same in all of these situations? And yeah, it's the individual.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And that is the human mind that is trying to solve problems so that it can arrive at the happiness that it so deeply desires. In theory, brains think these crazy things. If I can get rid of all of these things, then all I'll have left is happiness. Right? How does that usually go for us? That's so good, right?
I was getting ready to say, it doesn't seem like it's working.
Because these things happen all the time. Like these things that are coming up that are bothering people. I refer to them as the inevitable challenges of life. And like, do we want to sit here and battle the inevitable challenges of life? I don't, because that's going to take a lot of my energy. And I would like to use my energy for other things.
So what would your suggestion to parents, like let's say, you know, someone's out there listening to this or they're listening to it about themselves and they're like, hey, I have a kid like that, or that's me. What steps would you tell that person to take?
Well, it kind of depends on which me it is. If you are a parent and you're talking about your child and you're looking for ABA therapy, OT, definitely do not forget the OT, especially if you are pathologically demand avoidant, because there's a lot of sensory responses going on with that. But just in those moments, you will probably have a lot of fear and worry and concern about what you're experiencing. But just remember that it isn't necessarily that you need to go and find somebody to solve all your problems. Hey, this is about you. This is about going to practitioners and telling them about you and what you're experiencing, and not having those people necessarily tell you what you need to be doing instead, but meeting people that you can feel are really hearing you and are really making an effort to understand you and are using words like compassion or like child-centered or something of that nature. And just know that it is you that makes that decision, and that you, whatever decision you make, is the right one. And that if you don't like the way that's going, that you can just turn around and pivot and make a new decision and do something else.
Right. And it's almost empowering yourself. You're empowering yourself to believe and to know, and you might need a practitioner to help you get there, that you are in control. Right. And that you're in control of your happiness too. And when you're unhappy, instead of blaming it on the situation, on the system, on the child, on whatever it is that you are choosing to blame it on, that if you reframe it, if you do the internal work, you could really almost switch every situation to see it in a different light. And then I think on the children's end, maybe you want to also just give us some ideas of how we might help children to change their perspectives.
Well, you know, I love to do it just by, probably by doing a lot of things that adults don't want to do. But like when your kids ask you why, you know, not to shut them down or to go with, you know, the because I said so or something. If you don't feel like answering why, then just say, you know, I need a break. Let's talk about that later. But in the event that you do feel like asking why, to actually give your kids like the logical reasoning behind why you're choosing something. Like, why are we going to therapy? I don't want to go to therapy. I don't want anyone to boss me around and tell me what to do. Oh, well, I know it could really feel like you are being bossed around and told what to do. But as your parent, what I see is that you're experiencing a lot of challenges in your life, and those are causing you a lot of stress, I think. And I can tell you they're also really causing me a lot of stress as your parent. And when I see stress, I get help. And I go and just, you know, ask for more information. And then I make a decision. So that's all we're going to go do today. Because I want you to feel better.
Yeah, and I love that. Because I do think that children, they have brains. They have little brains. And they're little people with lots of ideas going on in there. And sometimes they're confused and sometimes they're jumbled. And if we really take the time to explain what we're doing and why we're doing it, a lot of times they can come to an understanding, whether it's on an adult level. Many times my kids surprise me when I explain them things and then they shoot it back at me. And I'm like,
every time.
You understood that like an adult. Like,
even the little babies.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. My 5-year-old's the one that surprises me the most right now. But yeah, she'll just shoot back stuff. And I'm like, wow.
Really?
So fascinating.
So yeah, maybe that's another fun piece of advice too, to just quit doubting your kids and what you think they should know or what you think they should be able to do. Like, they really will absolutely surprise you with what they understand. And guys, like, come on, you know, it's parenting, you know, it's whatever, like, they're born and they have some of the things we have as adults, but like, they're developing. Like, when they ask you these questions of why and how, like, that's it. Like, that's the parenting right there. Like, you've got your little human going to your big human and trying to learn about lifing as a bigger human. And this is your moment to teach them that.
And I love that you're bringing up that point, because, you know, sometimes we could get lost in the mundane and the getting the shoes and the snacks and the briefcases and preparing dinner and getting them showered and bathed and just, you know, running here and running there. And it's a busy life, parenting. It really is. But we don't want to miss, like you just said, those important parenting moments where we're really giving over to our children what the world is about and how to be a good human, and how to differentiate yourself from others by being that compassionate, caring person. And if we don't teach them how to be compassionate and caring to themselves,
I don't have any children of my own, but my partner has 3 children that are 2, 3, and 6. So yeah, so we're partying over here for sure. And the little 3-year-old, before we go to daycare in the morning, like, she always like won't want to put her shoes on. And it could, and it had before it turned into a thing of like, put your shoes on, we gotta go, hurry up, all of that. But one day I just go over to her and I'm like, hey, honey, you don't want to go to daycare? No. What do you want to do? I want to watch TV. Oh, you know what? Every day when I get up, I just want to watch TV too. And if it was Saturday, we would watch TV. But today's a daycare day. So you got to go do that. And I got to go to work. And daddy's got to go to work. But we can come home and watch some TV later. And then this weekend, we'll watch a movie. How about that? Does that sound okay? And they're like, yeah. Hey, can we put your shoes on and go to the car? Yeah. Carry me. And then it turned into like this sweet moment of being able to empathize with each other about the same thing that we were feeling, even though I'm a big human and she's a little human. Like, we were on the same level right then. We are all in the same boat.
Yes, 100%. 100%. And I think that in that moment, you took the time to make that connecting moment. And many times that moment skipped. Just get your shoes on and get in the car. Yeah. Right now, I need to make this happen. And when
that's
we miss
the adults out of gas.
The adults out of gas, or yeah. The adult has a lot of demands. We do have a lot of demands on us. If you're dealing with three, you know it. We have a lot of demands. There are a lot of demands. And while two-year-old's tantruming, three-year-old is freaking out about the snack, and five-year-old is doing something else. And there are a lot of demands, and we have to be compassionate to ourselves and understand that as well.
Yeah.
But you can't miss those moments. And if you do, you could always circle back. Like, a lot of times
Absolutely. In
the moment, I'll be like, we need to get the shoes on. We need to get in the car because I got to get to work. But when we get to the car, I'm going to have the conversation with you.
Yeah.
And when they understand that mom understands I'm going through something and mom cares, then that is a weight lifted off of them too. And it also gives them the knowledge that you validate them, you care about them, you
Absolutely.
Care about their feelings.
Because otherwise they're just suffering silently, looking around at everybody else who just looks perfectly fine. Like, oh, this is me. This is my problem. I'm the only one who, you know, hates this and doesn't want to go. And what's wrong with me that I feel this way and nobody else does, you know? I think that conversation I got to have with her was, I think Daddy had already taken the other tooth to the car. So I think that's
okay.
What
so you had a couple of minutes there. No,
he was in there refusing to put the shoes on. And I got left with her while she was refusing to put the shoes on. So.
And another thing I started doing so that, you know, for parents that have more than one child at home that are struggling that way is I used to do family dinner every night. So then it was chaos every night. And then we started doing only once a week family dinner where Dad and the kids and me, we're all there. And that's really nice because then we have different group discussions. But as children come in the door, you know, each one's at a different staggered hour. I take the time at that moment to give them that one-on-one time. So everyone has a different schedule, but really thinking in your head, like, how could I give my child that one-on-one time? And in which instance in the day? And if we don't do that pre-planning, that executive functioning of foreplanning of how will we give those children the time to really feel understood and validate their feelings and take them through the process of thinking through what is bothering me, why am I upset?
Yeah.
If we don't have that time to give them, then
you know,
we can't
get there. That conversation I was mentioning does sound long, but it's also what I've only since becoming a real human and understanding my feelings is that you can connect with a person so quickly just by taking the time to like look in their eyes and like you can feel it. Like you can feel it when it goes from just this transactional telling someone what to do to like, okay, we've really met here.
I love that you're bringing up the eye contact, and you had also mentioned it earlier, but I'll just bring out the point of also getting on their level. Like if you're the mom and you're all the way up there and they're the child and they're the two-year-old down there, and if you don't get on their level to have that eye contact and to say your body is telling them something when you get down there, you're saying, I'm leveling with you. I think you're important. I want to be on the same level. I want to connect. Your body language of when you level with them and when you make that eye contact is huge and does go so far.
Mm-hmm. I know. I spend so much time on the floor, I don't even remember.
yeah, exactly. I think you mentioned earlier that you like got down on her level. And I was like, yay.
Oh, yeah. I'll absolutely go down there.
Wow. Oh, my goodness, Caitlin. We had such an amazing conversation. It flew by so fast.
We
didn't even get to all my questions, but I really appreciate you coming on and sharing with us all these really important things. I really think that the points you brought up today are everyday challenges that children are having, that parents are having, and we are having, you know, like we're really living the journey. And through that journey, we have to embrace it, accept it. And you really brought up some wonderful points. If you had one message to leave off for to parents of children on the autism spectrum or individuals on the autism spectrum, what would it be?
You know, I think it's the we're all in the same boat. No matter how different we may seem or where we come from or our ages or abilities or whatever, we are all humans with the same, you know, innate needs, and we are all in the same boat.
Love that. Love that. Thank you, Caitlin. You are awesome. Really, really appreciate it.